You are listening to Omnis Protocol. I am Charles, also known as Omnis, and I am here with Nate, a.k.a. Deertron, Spectral Tyrant. What's going on, man?
Hey, glad to be back.
Well, obviously, you guys had a very successful second wind. I mean, the rumor I hear is that you really run everything and then Vince just takes credit for it. Can you confirm or deny these allegations?
I mean, I do a lot, but certainly he does the like mission critical stuff, right? A lot of my support is in some of the like prize support and the goofs and the, you know, little magic on top to make it more fun. But like the fundamentals of getting tables and getting terrain, that's all Vince.
So I loved the Pat emoji tattoos. How did that go in execution? And do you have a best story of the Pat tattoos?
Sort of. Okay. So how this happened, this was actually Vince's idea. He just messaged me one day on Discord and was like, do you think we can get custom tattoos made? And I was like, that's a, like, I had no idea what he wants to put on him, but I'm already on board. Whatever he's going to say, I am on board.
Did he say kind of like what was the, like, how he got to the point of like thinking this was an idea? It was like he watching a TV show and they did a little temporary tattoo. It's all
a
secret.
I have no idea. I really couldn't tell you. It just out of the blue one night, he's like, do you think somebody will make us temporary tattoos? And I was like, well, I'm excited to find out because I love wherever this is going. And so, you know, I brought up for details. It's like, oh, I really want to do, you know, temporary tattoos of the Pat emoji that we have. And I'm like, that's brilliant. Let's do it. And so I went and it took a little bit to find a tattoo place that would do it color. A lot of the ones really just, if you want to just like upload an image, they only do black and white, which, you know, makes sense. But we found one that would do color, surprisingly cheap too, which we're all very excited about. So we got those made up, got them cut, put them in all the swag bags. Then
it's
got
to be a Pat Van Value tattoo, right? If it's an expensive tattoo, like it breaks the whole, it breaks the whole scheme.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then both Vince and I goofed on the next step here, which was that, like, you know, we handed all the swag bags and then we were supposed to tell everyone during the like welcome to the event speech where we go over like clocks and, you know, which tables are upstairs and downstairs and all that. We were supposed to tell people these are, you know, temporary tattoos, and we just forgot. So most people just thought they were like stickers and were saving them to put on something at home or, you know, a KR form box or things like that. Right. And so it wasn't until like midway day two that we realized, oh yeah, we were supposed to tell people these were tattoos. So I don't actually know if more than like one or two of them were put on someone's person, but I'm hoping people come up with other events.
Box didn't even do something. He had all sorts of ideas.
Yeah, there was no execution. Really, you know, I think you're right that we should be blaming bots for this, because on Friday he had all these ideas for wearing them and then didn't follow through. So
disappointment. All right. So two follow-up comments to this. It's funny that I've never seen an MCP temporary tattoo ever. And then the same weekend, you guys have Pat emoji temporary tattoos and the Finnish WTC team turns their logo into a temporary tattoo as well. And every time somebody saw it, people were like, oh, it's a sticker. Like when my partner saw, that's cool. You got that in Denmark. That's like a sticker. I'm like, no, that's a tattoo I'm going to wear at some point. I don't know where yet, but that's funny that never heard of it before in all of the mini gaming. And then two places do it at the same time.
Yeah, the WTC is always great for what the different teams come up with for handing out swag, right? Because every team wants to have the coolest thing to give their opponents. And some of those people get real wild and creative with their ideas. And I love seeing it.
So the Irish team showed me their Deadpool, right? Mm. Which was this Deadpool, and he was holding two sticks, and he's got the Irish hat on that's really infamous from all of the WTCs. The Irish team always has the hat. And I thought it was a really cool sculpt, and I was really excited about it. It wasn't until Jacob Frelinger pointed out to me, he's like, have you shown this to your partner yet? Deadpool's holding hurling sticks, which she actually played for years, and it didn't even occur to me when I first saw it that it's Irish hurling sticks. And I was like, shit, that's amazing. I really should have asked for one.
That's awesome.
But Rory has told me that if I go back next year, he will give me both a Deadpool and whatever the one that they're doing for that year is. Guaranteed.
Oh, nice. So,
the second thing I was going to say is we should just make up a fake story about how it came about. And so I'm going to say that Vince was trying to convince his wife that he was that he should get a Pat emoji tattoo. And she said, no, you cannot have a permanent Pat tattoo. If you do it temporary, that's fine. And she's actually the inspiration for the whole thing.
Yeah, it works for me.
Okay, cool. All right, well, let's get into the actual like MCP stuff. So I know you kind of covered this in the Alfredo's episode, which I actually highly recommend that everyone goes and listens to. You had Zach on and you guys were talking about WTC. Well, actually, the episode before it is where you kind of talked about what you were going to play. And but people should listen to both episodes. I have been a big Alfredo's marketer lately. I definitely had a few conversations in Denmark where I was talking you guys up. And there's some people who hadn't listened in a while. The post-Adepticon Alfredo's episodes have just been fire after fire after fire. So please give them another listen. So fan here. But anyway, can you just kind of give a quick rundown? Like you were kind of, you weren't 100% locked into X-Men, but it ended up settling on them.
Yeah. So for the lead up to Second Wind, I, like everyone else, right, had to deal with the massive wave of errata that changed 24 models or whatever, right? Not alone in trying to figure out what to do there. Especially as someone who's played a lot of X-Men, and X-Men got, you know, probably the most individual changes of any faction, right? I think there's like, what, 10 affiliated X-Men in the document that changed.
I think that is
something.
Just factually correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So just a whole wealth of changes, buffs and nerfs. And so I was excited about the changes, but it does make for some meaningful differences in what Storm's game plan would be. Right. The change to the hop costing power, the change to Dr. Voodoo is a big one for how I was playing Storm like 3 months ago. Right. There's a bunch of things like that, that while I was excited for the future of X-Men, figuring out how quickly can I adapt to whatever the new plan needs to be in time for Second Wind was the real question. Right. Or should I go to something that was changed less that I think is good, like Sam? Right, where Sam is largely the same list it was pre and post routed, something I played before, something I like. I don't have to figure out a new game plan, right? That was kind of my biggest concern with Storm, is that the game plan is changing and I don't know how much. And then I also got COVID, which meant I missed out on like 2.5 weeks of practice and game nights, which didn't do anything for my confidence in knowing what I'm supposed to do. And, you know, so in all the practice games I did get was all with X-Men, right? And it was figuring out, okay, how much does this nerf hurt Storm? How much does this nerf hurt Voodoo? Was kind of my bigger question, honestly. It didn't take many games to learn that Storm's still great, right? She, as a model, is now exciting and fun to play. I thought she was exciting and fun to play before, and then they just buffed her as an individual model. So I'm just like, Storm's great. The hop, still great. You know, paying a power to move like 5 inches is still a really good effect. So terrific. You know, it's worse, but it's still great. The loss of cover is kind of painful, right? That's definitely the nerf I felt the most, and I think impacted my roster the most. I still felt like enough of the pieces were there that I was happy with using Storm leadership. And then it was figuring out what are the other pieces that go in that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I got a lot of questions where people are asking me why I wasn't playing X-Men at WTC. And my initial test, when I put Storm back on the table, I kept finding that my muscle memory was really off and characters were just dying. The situations that I was used to characters living through, just dead. I was losing characters left and right. And I wasn't sure that in the short amount of time, I could unlearn that muscle memory and instincts about what to where to put characters or what they can live through. You know, just some of those subtle choices is like, do I need to move this character and like double move them to another point right now, or are they okay for one activation? And some of that gut instinct was just really off in my test games. I'm like, I'm not sure I can unlearn this fast enough. Did that, was that that way for you, or did
exactly.
you just kind of feel that you
like word for word how I felt about it, right? And it's very much just that survivability question, right? Like, I was pre Errata, I was huge on Psylocke being maybe my favorite four in the entire faction, right? Because she was so reliable. She has reliable damage output, she has reliable effects, and she had reliable durability, because either she's stealth, in cover, or martial artist. One of those three things is applying, plus her rerolls, she will survive stuff. And then it's like, oh, wait, now there's a band where she just explodes, right? Now they can get outside of martial artist, inside stealth, and really kill her. And she was not living through situations I would have expected her to, right? So you're 100% on the mark with the problem that I was having as well.
Totally fair. I'm glad I wasn't I was trying to explain that to people who didn't play X-Men, and I don't think they got it. Like I remember when I first picked up X-Men, it was all about the hop. Oh, I need to take advantage of the cover more often. I need to remember this. I need a position for this. And then you start going like, holy shit, this is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the cover was too good, right? Like, I am not sad that they nerfed it, because it was probably just too strong for the game. And the game is probably better off for it being gone. But that adjustment was rough.
Yeah, it's a pretty big shift. And it's kind of funny. I know there will probably be non-X-Men players who are listening to this, and this might come across as just like mutant whining, but I'm still going to say it. Like, it is crazy how many buffs that X-Men and mutants got while being a net negative to the overall like strength of an X-Men list. Got more buffs than I think any affiliation has ever gotten in a single wave. But at the same time, the nerf that it also got still didn't net a positive. And I said from the very beginning, I cannot believe they ever made Storm's leadership. From the moment I saw it in like December of 2020 or whatever the fuck it was, I was like, I cannot believe that this is a leadership that they're putting out into the game. But okay, so coming to the event, what did you end up playing? What did the roster end up being that you brought to Second Wind? And how confident were you kind of feeling about it going into the event?
Yeah, so all of my test games helped me figure out which affiliated models that I liked best, right? I learned I liked Colossus quite a bit. I tested out buffed Wolverine some and realized he was just too dice dependent for what I wanted, so I went back to Logan instead. You know, kept Beast, kept Domino, and then Storm. And then Pyro stuck around because Pyro's still a boss. Cyclops was in there because I was starting to like how I felt with the Cyclops leadership. I told people this the day of Second Wind that if I had been more honest with myself, I shouldn't have brought Cyclops at all, because I was too much of a coward to ever put his leadership on the table. Right? Even in situations where I'm like, oh, you know, my round one game, I sat down, was a perfect situation to play the Cyclops leadership. And I was just like, nope, not practice enough. And if I'm not going to play it there, it should have just been like Rogue or something, right? And so that was a mistake on my part. And Rogue would have helped me a lot in my one loss. So, you know, I paid for my bad choices, but that's fine. And then, you know, so I figured out, okay, here's the affiliate models I like. I found out Voodoo, still my favorite extract stealer. He kept his job, worse than he was, but it doesn't matter. Possession still rules. Keeping Voodoo. And then literally the week of Second Wind, right? So my flight was on Thursday. On Tuesday, another X-Men player that I DM often is this guy, Kane, who's just like, have you tried Ultron 2 yet in Storm, right? And I was like, hadn't even crossed my mind, honestly, right? Before he said anything, I hadn't really been thinking about the new core box that much. Nothing in there on paper immediately jumped out to me. So I just like pushed out of my head, was focused on X-Men models. And so Kane laid out these arguments like, oh, here's all the stuff Ultron 2 can do. And at the time I was like, seems okay. I don't know. I slept on it. The next day I woke up and I was like, no, actually, that sounds really sick. Hold on. I think there's something here. And so I messaged some of my friends to see if they could. We don't normally play on Wednesdays, but I tried to see if I could get a couple of them to meet me at the shop on Wednesday so I could get one test game in with Ultron before heading out. right? And I was asked Carl, of CarlCon fame, if I could borrow his Ultron 2, because I hadn't picked up the core box yet either, and I knew he had and started assembling stuff. So I was like, hey, Carl, can I borrow your Ultron 2, and do you want to help me get a practice game tomorrow? And he's like, yeah, sure, no problem. So Wednesday night, he shows up with a fully painted Ultron 2 and drones in my paint scheme. And he's just like, you can just have these and give me, you know, when you buy the core box, give me the other Ultron 2. And I was like, holy shit, Carl. And then we played a
the
game.
Best.
And I lost. And even that game was enough to show that it wasn't Ultron 2's fault that I lost and that he was sick, right? Just after that single game, I was like, oh man, I'm already starting to see the lines and see the matrix behind all the things Ultron 2 can do in this list. So I was like, he's absolutely going to come in this list. I think he's very strong. And I think a lot of people won't have thought about him, especially what he can do in gold. And since I was feeling kind of unpracticed, I really liked having a curveball on my list, right? Because it's like, I'm unpracticed, but there's no way anyone else has more practice Ultron 2 and X-Men. So let's see if I can just got some people with like Age of Ultron and Ultron and give them a problem no one has thought about solving in years.
But so there was a point, it was Tuesday or Wednesday after the core set models were spoiled. So mm-hmm. It was a few days after it. I had been talking with my WTC team, and at this point, we were thinking that the core set was going to be allowed at WTC.
Right.
And I was so fucking pumped. I actually like figured out, I was like, I grabbed my Ultron with a cape. I grabbed my like Shatterpoint droids. And they were in my box, and I had it all packed up, and I was leaving for work Thursday morning because Thursday is my game day. And I was so hyped about Storm with Ultron Metal Tyrant. I was like, this is exciting. It's probably like the most excited I've been to play MCP in a while. And I walk to the bus stop and I look at my phone, and there's a post from Gil saying that the core set is not going to be allowed at WTC. Yeah. And I don't think I've been this heartbroken in a long time. And so when I was listening to your cast and you said that you were going to play Ultron, I'm like, well, at least I get to hear about how it worked. Cause, I think I was throwing like Black Widow in there as well. Cause I just kind of wanted to see how her, like when the hop was still free, right? Like what she would be like as like a grab extract and then harder to take it from. But I was more excited about the Ultron part. So I knew that, like, I was just excited to hear about how your event went from the moment that I heard your pre Second Wind cast. So the moment when you could have played Cyclops, which I will say, like, Jesse also played Cyclops in his list at WTC, and I don't actually think that Cyclops is a bad character under Storm. Like, he still has a really cool kit. So I think if people want to explore him in that, like, yeah, he's got competition with Logan and Rogue, but he's still a range 4 character that can push people with great superpowers.
Yeah, I mean, we'll probably get to this at some point here. We can have a focused conversation on Cyclops. Cyclops's kit is very, very good. The only reason I don't play him under Storm much is that he's just not doing something unique enough for what I need, right? He's a little bit too much of a generalist in a list where, especially with the Ultron, I tend to want kind of more specialized things, but we can get into that.
I don't want to dive into your games too much, but do you want to do just kind of a quick through of the games, kind of like what you played, maybe a key moment, and we'll try not to spend too much time in it so we can kind of talk about the list and some of the strategies and stuff more afterwards. So round one, what'd you get?
So round one defenders, it was Skrulls and Intrusions, right? Intrusions. Okay. Storm hates Intrusions. Everybody knows it's like one of her least favorite options, right?
Clearly.
Did not have Pryo. Yep. Because I was playing all Pataflips. And so this is one where it's like, absolutely would be happy to play Cyclops on Intrusions. You're going to end up with all of your models pretty close to each other. Sharing power will not be a problem at all. And just he can load up on a bunch of models who like being in the fight. And then with hit and run, he can just kind of skirt the edges of the fight and keep himself relevant but safe. But I couldn't do it. Didn't bring myself to do it. So played Ultron instead.
You recall what the lists were? I assume Storm, Ultron.
I know I played Storm, Ultron, Pyro, Beast. If I was smart, I would have taken some notes about what I had played.
Professionals here, I tell you.
Yeah, I mean, this game kind of swung pretty hard in the first two turns. So my opponent on Skrulls recognized that he doesn't have any safe grabs, and I'm X-Men, I've got a billion safe grabs. And so since he has priority, he decides he's going to use his Rhino and double walk and take my Skrull.
God, I hate it when people do that.
Yeah.
It irritates me so much. Like, you're fucking up my safe grab.
Unfortunately, he does get pushed. And so he gets pushed straight forward into the waiting arms of, like, Beast, Pyro, and Storm. And so I'm like, all right, shoot you with Pyro to set you on fire, set you up. Pyro himself cranks, like, 4 or 5 damage into Rhino. Ooh. And then Storm and Beast finish him off. And so, like, I'm able to bring down his Rhino, get my Skrull back without using my hop and without Ultron having to participate at all. And so that meant Ultron and the drones got to go forward and shoot into, it was Daredevil, one of his other models, right? And so just like right from the start, he's down a Rhino and I still have all of my extracts and attrition is going very well for me. And it kind of spiraled from there where like the next turn, Rhino woke up with a bunch of power. He used robbery and tramples and his attacks to try to daze Storm and Beast and get the extract off of Beast. He manages to daze Storm. He does a little bit of damage to Beast and he places himself like back into sort of relative safety and then picks up the Skrull that he robberied off and got pushed back into my team again. And so then Pyro, and I think Domino was there too at that point, could just lay into his Rhino, and I killed. I mean, he traded his Rhino for days.
Aggressive is not working
Storm
the way that he wants it to.
So in this game, he made a high risk, high reward gamble with his Rhino, and then got punished about as hard as humanly possible, right? And really just made that. I think a lot of the game was kind of about that specific interaction and how it just kind of cascaded from there.
It's a game where stuff dies. People forget just how much murder can actually be done with an X-Men team. All right, so hey, it's always nice to get a win round one. Mm-hmm. shake off the nerves. I'm always like unnecessarily nervous the first round of anything. Like I'm always just like a little bit more shaky and always have to get that round one out of the way. So, all right. So you proceed to round two, not drinking yet, I assume?
No, I don't drink until I lose.
Okay. So what was the round two matchup?
So round two, I got priority. It was into a Steve Rogers team and we got hammers and spider portals. So
Mighty
right
Steve,
away,
Steve three.
Nah, Steve one.
There was a lot of Steve three at second win. So you
there was a lot of Steve three.
Misunderstanding.
Yes. No, it's a good clarification point for sure. So I was very happy to get spider portals here because obviously that's great for me. And
when
I think,
are you not happy to have spider portals?
Yeah. And I think Ultron 2 is actually quite good at spider portals as well, which makes me feel even more confident in having that in the roster. So was stoked to win Pryo, was stoked to get my secure. I played Ultron, Pyro, Storm, Domino, and Logan. He played, and the important models I know he played with Steve and Hulk. He played Scarlet Witch, which was not what I expected and ended up being kind of punishing. And I don't know, some other model that was less consequential. And so where the game ended up, right, is that I used Logan and to me, my X-Men to grab the hammer on my left and back up, right? Grab the hammer, flip the portal, back away. And then he ends up sending Hulk and Steve to my right side to get those hammers and fight over that portal away from Logan. And then actually, unfortunately, he had Sam Wilson because he ended up being able to have Sam Wilson like airlift Scarlet Witch forward so that Scarlet Witch could walk and shoot Logan and just like cranked some damage on Logan turn one. And then Scarlet Witch flipped the portal back. And I was excited because she also got a skull, so I could move her out of range to not shoot Logan. I'm like, okay, Logan can at least be safe for next turn. And then the top of the next turn was him Avengers assembling Scarlet Witch forward to then just blast Logan down. And I was like, oh, well, that didn't work out great. And on the other side with Hulk, I'm trying to set up how to kill Hulk, right? Like, I've got a Pyro over there, I've got a Domino over there, and I've got an Ultron over there. And with Kick'em, I have all the tools to be able to put down Hulk, but I do have to navigate around Bodyguard, and he does do a good job not getting Hulk stranded in there and, like, using throws and walking back when he needs to make sure I can't just, like, really set my feet and lay into Hulk. So there's, like, a dance going around us trying to kill Hulk, but the problem is he's brought, I think he only has four models. Yeah, because he's got a 5-threat and a 6-threat. And being outnumbered on spider portals ends up making the game very difficult, right? And that's largely why we're just, like, dancing around that. I sneak Storm to the left portal. Kind of, oh, no, it was Domino. Domino's there. Because I get Domino onto the left portal, kind of like behind Scarlet Witch. Right. Storm ends up being able to flip the portal out from underneath Hulk because she's got 4 energy defense. So I'm just like, walk, walk, flip. Storm doesn't do anything to Hulk anyways. Right. So I might as well steal his VP. And then Ultron actually ends up changing gears and realizing instead of trying to kill Hulk, I can actually pick on Steve, daze him, and then start pushing towards his back portal. Right. And this was something, kind of one of my big takeaways with Ultron that I wanted to talk about, is on spider portals in my head, the plan was, okay, Ultron with his grunt and Age of Ultron should be able to win a flank on his own, right? Or at least not lose it.
Makes sense.
The amount of effort it takes to kill an Ultron who has Age of Ultron is enormous. So I can put Ultron on one flank by himself, have the rest of my team fight over the other flank, and win the games that way. And then this game, I sat down to do that, and during deployment realized, wait a second, I have Logan, whose job is to be on a flank and not lose that for me. I can't do, you know, I can't, like, avoid both of my flanks here. That's not going to work. Right. And I'm like, well, Logan obviously gets direct benefits for being on his own with his rerolls. So I'm going to let him have that flank. And Ultron's going to actually join the party on the right side. And instead of fighting over that portal directly, I actually kind of put him, if you picture like a triangle between the 3 points on that side, he kind of ends up in the dead center of that triangle where, like, with him and his grunts, he can hop walk to any of the 3 portals, and he can hop shoot or hop bow anyone on any one of those 3 portals. And so he's not really committing to go way out there. He's kind of just sitting in the middle of the board being a boss and going wherever he wants and solving whatever problem he wants. And that play pattern was super successful both in this game and a couple other games where I just end up, like, putting him in the middle and then having, like, Pyro or Storm kind of range 2 behind him towards my portal, having his grunts range 2 forward in front of the portal so that, like, I have so many hop nodes, I have so many options, right? Ultron can be anywhere at any time doing anything he needs to do.
Yeah, it's one of those things, as long as you can avoid losing an activation and then, like, losing the last activation, having 5-4 on spider portals is so great. Now, when you lose that key activation and then suddenly their 4 characters get to do better attrition and then go last, that sucks. So you just have to avoid that. But yeah, that sounds like a really interesting game. And it kind of just sounds like the game that X-Men players love. Like, you just love to be a part of that game. Like, can you outposition? Can you outrotate? So very cool game.
It definitely felt like one of those games. Vodka and I have both said this a bunch on various discords, right? Where I felt like my opponent had brought a very good squad to deal with my squad, but not to deal with spider portals, right? And a lot of me winning that game was just being more practiced at how the tempo and rotations of spider portals go than he was, versus anything about, like, the models interacting with one another, right? If we had, like, even like Infinity Formula or Intrusions or a more standard scenario, I think his squad is very well positioned to deal with mine, but it just wasn't the right squad to play spider portals at the same time.
I think you hit on a very subtle tone that I know you and I have talked about in discords, but I still feel like the overall community misses. And it's like, the biggest advantage that X-Men gets, especially on pay-to-flips, is people's, like, kind of unwillingness to, like, practice and prepare for them at all. People just avoid them. They try not to play them. Yep. They try not to change their lists at all for them. Yep. And that's where the advantage actually comes from. It's not that X-Men are so astronomically better at peta flips than anyone else. It's that X-Men players practice them, and then they just end up in this advantage situation where they just know how to play the matchup better than their opponents do. And the biggest advice, if someone's listening to this and they're just like, fuck X-Men, fuck peta flip, just play them. Yes. And you will naturally just come up with solutions. It's just a problem. Like once you just go, this is a problem that I've got to solve, like CGR or Hulk or anything that's ever existed in the game. You just go, let me think about how I'm going to solve this problem. And then you practice it. You are going to lose way less games to X-Men.
But okay, I definitely think that, you know, X-Men are definitely advantage on pay to flips against most everyone, right? Except like Asgard, I think gets weird in a hurry, but nobody plays Asgard, so I don't have to think about it. Yeah. They're advantage, but like you said, it's not to the extent people think it is, right? It's like a minor little advantage that we have here and not this like, oh, they're just unbeatable thing, right? And like, I know our mutual friend Jacob, who plays nothing but Kingpin, right? All he wants to do is play Kingpin all the time, decided he needed to figure out how to do better on pay to flips himself because they're so bad for Kingpin. So he took his CS roster, took out all the Kingpin secures, and just put in pay to flips, obviously hurting his win rate, but being able to just practice and jam pay to flips. And what he learned was exactly what you just said, was that, oh, I'm winning these games playing CS on pay to flips just because my opponents don't know how to play and build for pay to flips.
I remember when I came back to the game and Jacob had picked up playing a lot, like he was actually just, he's just like one of those like friends where you're just like, Jacob wasn't even playing MCP and he subscribed to my Patreon just because he wanted to support me. He wasn't even playing the game yet. And he's just like, you're my bro, I'm supporting you. And then all the Guild Ball crew, you know, you guys just like got into it, and he got into it too. And when I came back to the game, when I, you know, I don't think he fully realized that I was like a pay to flip guy from a long time and he was all in on Kingpin. So there were so many matchups because that kind of primary local opponent was just like, I'm pay to flips and he wants to play Kingpin. And so we had a lot of those, but I still stand like, if you put Logan in Daredevil Criminals, it's actually a super hard matchup for Storm when Daredevil gets the last activation and they always get to Logan, one of your guys, with a 4 defense roll on that portal. Like it can be an active problem playing, well, I won priority. I chose my secures. You're just as wide as I am. Your Logan gets to activate last, murder some of my stuff, and then potentially flip the point. Like it's not nearly as favored to X-Men as I think some people think it is, but
absolutely.
Let's move on to your third round. So what did you get here?
So this one I probably have the most to say because this is the one I lost.
Always got to dissect the losses.
I mean, this was one of the coolest games of Marvel I've ever played as well. And I'm sad that we were on table 2 instead of table 1 where it was recorded, because this was just, it was cool stuff was happening on both ends of it. And it came down to a single VP, just the perfect game to show off cool stuff. This was me playing X-Men into my buddy Kev playing Web Warriors. And I knew my roster has always had trouble, like, cleanly beating Web Warriors. I've beaten Kev a bunch. We've played in like the Juicy League games. We've played a bunch. I think I've won maybe all of them, if not all but one. I usually win, but they're always nail biters, right? It's every single time they're coming right down to the wire. And I've thought about it. It's like, man, how do I shore this up and make it better? And that was a problem I was working on even before the errata. And then with the errata, I kind of had to derail my plans of solving that specific problem so that I could make sure I'm solved against the wider meta. And also I just think, man, Web Warriors is just like my personal kryptonite or something. I have such a bad win rate, probably of any faction. My lowest win rate is against Web Warriors.
I would not have guessed that, but
he wins Pryo, which sucks. He gets Scoundrels, which is the worst. Of all the things I wanted to see, him winning Pryo, like if I win Pryo and get paid to flips, obviously it's a way better game for me. If we get like even Infinity Formula, would feel a lot better for me than Scoundrels. And then the extract was Skrulls, which isn't ideal, but it's fine. I would have liked to get cubes. I think if I get cubes, I'm feeling better into him. But I think the Scoundrels flip is the most impactful of the Crisis flips.
Getting Kingpin, Criminals, or like Webs on Scoundrels with them also having priority, it's that's the latter time for X-Men.
Absolutely. And so this is one, I mean, this was a helpful game because I identified a problem with my roster once we got to deployment. I picked 20 threat because I like having as many of my anti-webs tools as possible, right? Like I like where it's very comfortable and easy to fit in Voodoo because I want to play Voodoo here really bad. I wanted to play Ultron here because I think he's very hell. He's not, I don't know. I haven't found a bad matchup for Ultron, and he offers some unique abilities into webs with Bao in particular. I think is extremely helpful in getting around some of their defenses.
Being immune to web line certainly does not hurt.
Yeah. Absolutely not.
Hell, even the grunts you could position to block web lines on other people.
Yep.
Yeah. Just lots of tools there.
And then I ran into a problem where I realized I needed to play... I had to play both of my four threats to make... I had to play Colossus to make the math work. Colossus or Cyclops. And I don't love either of them on Scoundrels into webs, right?
Because don't have a two threat, right? And you would need either a two threat or you have to play double fours to make the math work.
Yep. And so I was playing Logan, happy to play Logan here, but I needed one of my other fours between Colossus and Cyclops. I chose Colossus thinking, well, he's immune to web line as well, so he can get on a point and be good at that. He's basically impossible for web warriors to kill efficiently, so you can at least hold the thing down. And that is mostly true up until the point where they use one of their like six affiliated steals to just steal Colossus' thing and run away. And then Colossus doesn't do a lot for me. So he wasn't bad, like he wasn't a boat anchor, but that's a place where, like we talked earlier, right, I would have loved to have like rogue is great into web warriors, would have been great here. I need to figure out something better in my roster and think about how do I fit in Ultron and Voodoo at various point levels to do with web warriors. But even with that, right, what actually swung this game was two very clever plays from my opponent using Gwen, right? Gwen is the model that rewards creativity more than like any other model, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I think that's almost indisputable.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. It was one from Gwen, one from Spider-Woman, right? So the first one is I had Logan on one of my home scoundrels, and I wanted him to go contest the far one that Black Cat was sitting on, right? And just stop him from scoring a point, because I know in general in this matchup, if I stop him scoring points is better than me scoring points, because I just have to slow him down, right? And then I can naturally catch up with attrition. Yeah. And I'm like, well, Logan punching Black Cat isn't very likely to do anything when she has cover and I don't get my rerolls because she's new Black Cat, or crits, right? So it's like five dice with no crits, no rerolls into Def 3 and cover seems kind of unexciting, right? I'm like, oh, there's a juicy Wong sitting near the point, but not on the point, where I can hit him for value and then place and be contesting, right? And so I'm looking at this. I'm like, okay, Spider Tracker doesn't work on Wong. Don't have to worry about it. Gwen is in the middle of the board. Can't pull Wong to safety. Don't have to worry about it. So I'm like, cool. Walk up, punch Wong. And he's like, okay, I'm going to pull Wong towards the center so that when you land, you're no longer contesting. And I was like, oh, shit. I thought, like, he can't stop the attack, right? Normally, I look at Gwen, I'm like, can she stop me making the attack I want? No? Cool, let's do it. Didn't need to stop the attack. He just had to stop Logan from landing where Logan wanted to land, right? And so that was oops number one. And then the end of the game comes around, and he's ahead by either a tied or he's ahead by, like, one. And, you know, there's Skrulls scattered everywhere, people scattered on points. I'm doing the math of who can score what. Right. I'm like, okay, Spider-Woman holding a Skrull, standing on a point in my bottom left. She's worth 2 points. She's already activated. We know what's happening down there. Right. I can't get anyone over to move that point. Don't need to worry about it. I'm figuring out what Voodoo needs to do. Right. I'm saving Voodoo for last because that's what you do with Voodoo, to see how do I make sure he doesn't get to pass 16. And I'm like, okay, there's an injured Wong standing in front of him. He can't pick anything up. You know, there's no Skrulls near him. He's injured, so he doesn't matter for any of the contesting that's happening. Can ignore Wong. And I go with, I think it was like Logan on the right side, or I go with some model just to see if I can't kill Miles, not expecting it to happen, but I can get on the point. And if I kill Miles, I'm in the money, right? But there was a low odds play, but it's just kind of one of those, like, all right, I can keep waiting on Voodoo. So I go with that. And then he's like, okay, Wong activates. He walks straight down towards Spider-Woman, gives Spider-Woman a power, and then walks to the center point. And I was like, oh shit. Spider-Woman was on 2 power. Now she's on 3 power standing next to a Dazed Colossus. That interrogate is what wins him the game. And I just didn't see it. I'm like, nope, she's got 2 points. She has 2 power. She is activated. There's nothing she can do to change the math. I'm running the math, you know, a dozen times. And the stupid fucking Wong walk, handed out of power walk, wins him the game.
Oh, man. Just watch the stream game as well, where Interrogate ended it early. Man, I feel like there was like some Taco Truck podcast that had a guy who was downplaying Interrogate and people asking him how to interrogate to win. And he's like, yeah, just don't use that. Oh, yeah.
So Interrogate is one of those things that you're going to use once every like 2 or 3 games, right? The thing, yeah.
If even that, it might be 3 or 4. Like, it's,
sure. Yeah.
It's not an every game wins you a thing, but when it does, it does.
Yeah. Like, it's definitely not dead text on her card. You're very happy to have it and have it there. The thing that was getting Vince all riled up about it, as you alluded to, was that people were trying to like build an interrogate game plan where they want to interrogate every turn. And like, that's plan A. They're like, no, you just can't, like, you won't get success going for interrogate as hard as you can, but it is a good ability that's worth using. As you said, you know, once every 4 or 5 games, it's going to make all the difference in the world.
Yeah. When you layer it in, like, and honestly, this reminds me of a War Machine point, because I played like the same faction the whole time. And you just end up with like, it's almost kind of like chess maneuvers. Like, bots would like this. Mm-hmm. This is a thing that I do in 1 out of 3 games or 1 out of 4 games, but I have it in my toolbox. I've learned how to do it. I know when to do it. And then you have these other things. And when you just like add the interrogate tool to the already existing Web Warriors vast array of chess moves, right? It just diversifies the options of things that you can do to win games that your opponent can't keep all of them in their mind, especially, you know, as you're getting later into an event, right? Like, it gets harder and harder to keep it all in your mind. So you lose a really, really close game against Webs, worsen your Web Warriors record, and it doesn't even get streamed. I'm going to blame the guy who was running the event. Clearly, ball dropped on that person's fault, you know. But you played one more game that day. What was the fourth round?
So the fourth round was the first of 2 games that I ended up playing into New Doc Ock. There were 2 Spider Foes players at this event, and I've played both of them.
So you get to play against the coolest looking team twice.
It was impressive. Like, I'm actually really glad I hit both of them, because they both had slightly different approaches to Doc Ock, and I was interested in both of them. And I think like an amalgamation of those ideas and like rounding out some of what's in there would be very strong.
I've literally gotten more excited about this podcast just hearing about the fact I didn't know you played Foes twice, and like Doc Ock, I'm like pretty excited about anyway. So please go on.
Absolutely. So yeah, I mean, these games, I gained a lot of respect for Doc Ock, and I thought he was kind of cool before. And so this one, I think, was the scariest of the two in that. So it was on Paranoia and Mutant Madman, right? And I had priority. And so I'm like, okay, great. I have my pay to flips, totally happy to play Paranoia. Got plenty of ways to get stuff, score points. You know, he was playing Doc Ock, Rhino, Lizard, Ultron 2, and Okoye. I was playing
that sounds like something I would play.
Storm, Ultron 2, Pyro, Domino, Beast.
Okay.
I think that math adds up. We'll pretend it does. And so I'm feeling pretty good going into this.
Math does in fact add up.
Sick. use priority, use 2 Max Men, grab one of the paranoid. Oh, and so important note, he plays Sinister Traps on the rightmost paranoia, right? Okay. I'm like, okay, that's going to make it harder for me to steal that one round one. You know what I mean? Like, dealing with the stupid Sinister Traps thing.
Wait, you would have had a fourth threat, right? Because you were playing at 18, not 16.
Oh, yeah. There was a Colossus in there.
No, it would be Colossus, Ultron, and then 3 threes.
Colossus, Ultron, Beast, Storm, Domino.
Perfect. That sounds like what I would choose.
Oh, no. Beast, Pyro, Storm. Yes, because I played Pyro every game. I played Ultron 2 every game. So that makes my list easier to remember.
Sweet.
And so, like, okay, you Sinister Trap, the one that was the easiest for me to get. Like, I liked getting it because I like Beast could go get it and come back onto my Madman, flip the Madman, feel really good. That one's trapped. Rough, but, you know, that's the game. So I instead grab the leftmost one. right? And then he just like, all right, Lizard double moves to the center, grabs one of these paranoias, takes a damage, heals it, and is just like, I'm going to tank it out, right? It's like, I don't have safe grabs. I just have beefy lads. And I'm like, yeah. Okay. I mean, that's the game, you know. He's playing a very beefy list. I totally get it, right? And I'm like, all right, well, let's see if I can put down a Lizard because that was what he gave me to shoot. Pyro walks up, shoots Lizard, does a damage, gets the incinerate. The Doc Ock leadership removes the incinerate and gives Lizard a bonus power. And I was like, that wasn't a good exchange. That didn't feel as good as I wanted
give
it to.
I you one damage. I gain one power. You gain two power.
Yes. And are not incinerated. Excellent. Terrific. And so then he also goes with Rhino and grabs the other middle paranoia. And we both kind of ignore the Sinister Trapped one. I had thought about just like double moving, like Ultron and the Grunts kind of deployed in the center. So I considered having the Grunts go double move and just eat the trap so I wouldn't have to think about it, right? And then I can just get the Grunts back and it's fine.
That's actually like a really fucking good use for them. Like my first game with foes, like someone used their Ultron Grunts. I'm like, the fucking Grunts didn't even die. Now they're at one health. So they're easy to kill whenever he wants them to die. God damn it.
Yeah. But then I'm like, well, if I do that, I'm just freeing up the extract for him to grab it with his Doc Ock that's over there. So I think I'll just wait on that and keep the Grunts here because I wanted to be able to hop Ultron forward where he can easily threaten both Lizard and Rhino, right? And let Ultron get his full stack of attacks off turn one. So I do that. I put the attacks into Lizard. They do some damage, but I don't kill Lizard, which is fair enough. You know, that dude's tanky, right? Yeah. It's only 2 6 dice attacks and one shot from the Grunt. He's in cover for maybe both attacks. Yeah, I think he's in cover for all of it because the first one doesn't go good enough. I need to get 2 damage through to get Bao online, right? Because I have to pay a power to hop, so I'm on 0.
Yeah.
So I need 2 damage before I can Bao him outside of cover. First attack doesn't get me there. Second attack does. And so he's got like 1 or 2 left, but it's largely fine. His Rhino got a paranoia sitting pretty. And so I'm like, okay, not my favorite turn one. You know, he's got 2 paranoias. I've got 1. We both flipped our madmens, right? And nothing too spicy happening there. And then there's the one that's trapped. And I was like, all right, next turn, I'm going to try to kill his Lizard, get the one off of him, right? Start things that way. I think I went with Pyro here too, because he only had like 2 health left and I wanted to save Ultron for later. So I go with Pyro, I shoot him, I do a damage, I hit the incinerate, he takes the incinerate off. I was like, right, yes, I just cannot, I will never incinerate this model. Understood. Shoot Lizard again. I think I kill him here, or maybe it takes him. No, I kill him here. He drops the paranoia. Then he goes with his Ultron that was on the other side, and he's like, all right, the Grunts walk forward, shoot Beast, do a couple damage. I was like, yeah, that's, you know, energy attacks into Beast doesn't feel good. Ow.
Yeah.
And then his Ultron walks forward and bows my Beast into the trap. And I was like, oh yeah, fucking stupid Beast has wall crawler. It was like up on a building, so I wasn't thinking about it, but Beast with wall crawler could just get up on top of the building, get trapped, get pushed. He shoots Beast, dazes him, throws a size 3 into Storm and does like 3 or 4 damage to her. And that's all the models I have on that side of the board is now like a Storm on 2 health. And I was like, oh no.
Holy shit, I wish this game was recorded. Like, I actually think this game, like, I'm already like, I'm just totally in. Yeah.
It was very cool because, like, so, you know, we battle around back and forth. He didn't have a Koya. He had 2-point Widow was his 2-pointer hanging out on the Lizard side of the board. And I'm able to have Colossus double move over to her, Madman, steal that from her. Him getting 3 of the 4 paranoias, and then he manages to steal Storm's Madman, maybe both of mine. All I remember, end of turn 2, I look at the scoreboard, and it's like 11 him, 6 me, or 5 me. And I was like, I don't know the last time I've had this much of a deficit playing X-Men, right? Like, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, that's really, really rare.
And so I just have to, like, stop and think. I'm like, okay, what things I'm doing here clearly are not working. I am in a big hole here, and this is not a situation I find myself in very often, right? And I just think, you know, this idea of a Spider Foes team that just tries to blitz you on score very quickly, kind of like a different version of Hellfire, is really interesting because he had so much power, right? It's just like looking at the lizard and rhino that I'm fighting in the middle, they had so much power all the time. And like lizard never had to make attacks himself to get power. He was just on it. He just always had exactly what he needed, right?
It's crazy how when you make one damage into lizard and his throw's online.
Yeah. Yep.
Like
it's terrifying. Yeah. And so he is really bullying me on scenario in a way that I was not expecting. And so I managed to stop the bleeding long enough, basically what happened, right? I managed to, he unfortunately, too much of his good attrition pieces between Doc Ock and Ultron 2 and kind of Rhino were all on the right side of the board dealing with Storm and Beast. Whereas my Ultron and Colossus and Pyro were just dealing with like Lizard and Widow. And so I get to basically win the left side of the board before Storm and Beast lose the right side of the board too hard. And like I get the paranoia off of Lizard to safety. And then the paranoia, I managed to daze Rhino, get his paranoia with Ultron and hold that. And so I kind of like stopped the bleeding long enough to be able to consolidate largely again off the back of Ultron 2, right? Him just being able to sit in the middle of the board. Like I go as long as possible in this game with him not picking up a paranoia, even when he's like killing people and dropping them next to him. Cause like, no, I'm pretty sure I still need the storm hop, right? Like that storm hop is just too important to what's going on here that I will let him, like he's able to like, I'll put a paranoia on the ground. Widow can come take it. I'm betting I'll be able to kill Widow, but that's better than giving up the storm hop for the next turn. Right. And just like waiting as long
as
possible.
That's how I felt playing Red Skull as well. Like very sometimes you fucking like mission objective that shit just to someone else just so the hop's online.
Oh, yeah. That's another mistake in my list. I didn't have mission objective at Second Wind and regretted it greatly. It would have won me the game against Webs. It would have been very helpful in some other matchups. Immediately slammed that thing back in my list on the flight home. Because, yeah, and it would have been great for Ultron, right? Because, yeah, you really, the storm hop is so crucial into how he can carry games for you. And so, yeah, that's kind of the tail of the tape was just using Ultron's and the drones attacks to get ahead of on attrition that I can catch up and just barely win on the last round. But I think with, like I said, just like some slightly different roster decisions, that Doc Ock list becomes a terrifying scenario team.
Yeah, 100% agreed. So you have a night off. You get to recover. You get to have some drinks. Enjoy some alarmist sweet beverages. and then you get foes first thing in the morning. So you practice into it. Then you get a rematch right away.
I actually did have a break because there was two rounds on Sunday. And the first round on Sunday, I played into Jacob on Kingpin. And then Foes was the round after that. So I did get a very brief break from Doc Ock.
We're having a Frelinger cast.
Yes.
His dice for Second Wind and stuff, just fucking rock star.
Oh,
I love
gorgeous.
Jacob.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He's also just one of the sweetest people. Like, if you have a chance to talk to Jacob at a con or at an event, like, he's just one of the most fucking awesome people in the community. And I'm absolutely very lucky to have known him for quite a while. I just love that dude.
No, Jacob's the best. Yeah. He was, when I got into, like, traveling for Guild Ball and I didn't know anyone, he was definitely one of the friendliest people that I met initially, and was, like, super helpful and crucial in, like, getting me into the scene and getting me introduced to other people who are around. So can't say enough nice things about Jacob. Yeah. So he wins priority. Sad. Really want pay to flip the Kingpin.
Yeah. that crucial prior role against criminals.
We flip the crisis. I get hammers. Fine. He flips scoundrels. And I was like, are you kidding me? Am I going to have to do web scoundrels and then Kingpin scoundrels in the same event? I'm like, oh my God, you've got to be. All right, here we go.
I will say, like, hammers, scoundrels is not as bad as what it could be, right? Like, at least there's no, like, one of his characters walks into the middle and then also gets an extract sort of bullshit.
Yep.
Hammers at least is a spread formation.
Yes, absolutely. And so this game, this is one where I felt very happy to have Ultron. In a way that was more impressive than like the Web Warriors game because having Bao is just so crucial in the Kingpin, right? Back in the day, when Kingpin, but like remember when Enchantress first came out and it's like, oh man, she just like automatically beats Kingpin, right? Just having a four threat that can just walk all your big guys off the point no matter who they are. So many Kingpins hated that stuff. And then we just haven't had Bao on a relevant character until now. And so, yeah, making sure I had the power every single turn to Bao someone off a point while I'm just doing really good attrition work with Ultron is kind of the story of this game.
Not surprised. So we don't have to go super in details and you don't remember the squads, but do you remember what the final score ended up being?
So it ended. It was very close still because it is a good crisis flip for him. It ended up being 16-14. I wish Jacob was on here because I remember there was like one talking to him after the game and there was like one decision point where if he had gone the other way, I'm pretty sure he could have just stolen the game from me. So it was definitely a very close match, but...
I'm sure he will comment in the Discord and he will just tell us what the defining moment was. But yeah, he's probably one of the criminals players who's just like more practiced on flips in general. I've definitely put him through the ringer a bit. But I think you probably got really lucky with the hammers pickup here because I think your other two extracts plus scoundrels might have been worse for you.
Definitely. Yeah. If I could have picked my extract, I would have picked hammers because the extra dice actually really does make a meaningful difference in the attrition. Like I know I have to do some attrition work here, right? That's kind of another one of my big takeaways with this list. And I think kind of X-Men in general is that previous versions of this list, I felt very confident with minimal attrition. Right. It was just like, okay, Domino and X-23 will combine to kill a model or two throughout the course of the game, but I'm largely just going to be using damage as a deterrent and getting the extracts and scoring out the game that way. Right. Yeah. You know, if they bring a big boy, I got to bring Pyro and kick them. But like, I'm not really trying to attrition you very hard. And I think with all the changes, and especially if you're going to spend 5 threat on Ultron 2, you're much more of like a mid-range team where, yeah, you still have safe extract grabs and you're going to use them every game. Absolutely you are. But you are also like, I have killed more things in this event than like any other event since I was playing Guardians, right? And the team's very well positioned to do that. But there definitely is that kind of mindset change of recognizing that you can't just run away as much as you used to anymore and just rely on positioning and distance and the storm cover to keep you alive, right? Your stuff is squishier. It will get shot and killed way quicker than it used to. So you have to be doing meaningful attrition work throughout the course of the game.
Yeah, I think it's interesting where like if you go back like a year and a half, when we kind of really started exploring X-Men, there was games where it felt like you barely had to make attacks. Like,
yes.
And it has been this slow shift in the meta where certain things change, certain things leave, certain things shift. And it's just like every step of the way with the releases and the way the meta's shifted, it's just been like, okay, you got to accept that you got to make attacks in this situation. And then you got to accept that you got to make attacks in this situation. And it's just gotten to be a little bit more. And I think that's probably good overall for the game. And now it's definitely balancing, you know, the overall X-Men game plans and advantages with flip secures and safe grabs with when and how do you fight. And that's that's still a really important lesson, I think, for all X-Men players. So, again, big shout out to Jacob. And then you go in and it sounds like you got a foes to finish the day.
Yep. And so this was one, so he's playing Doc Ock, and he definitely has a similar idea of like, I'm going to play a fast scoring scenario team, right? Yeah. He wins priority, but either, I don't remember if he brought pay to flips or if he just wanted his extracts more. Let me check that real quick, because I do think Doc Ock is quite good at pay to flips.
As a pay to flip player, that was one of the things. Like, I saw his card, and that was one of the first things that jumped out at me. And I do know that you and I were kind of discussing this in my Discord a bit. It's actually surprising how good his builder is.
Yes.
I instinctually in my head, without doing any math, I looked at his builder and I was like, this is pretty fucking good. Probably not quite as good as six dice, but good. Then I was asking about it because I was kind of just like throughout the actual dice math, and there are small situations where it's 1% worse, but on most situations, it is actually just better than six dice. And that kind of shocked me.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously, like, you look at, like, Gamora or something, and you're like, holy fuck, this is a fourth threat that rolls six dice. And I don't think people are responding to Doc Ock like they are responding to a character who has a six dice builder.
Better like, than six dice builder. Yeah, yeah, right, I totally
agree.
People
aren't even responding to him like he has six dice. Sure. He actually has better than six dice builder, and I don't think the community has absorbed that yet.
No, I totally agree with you, right? And I think, because, like, people look at Doc Ock, and the number one thing I see people complain about is like, oh, he doesn't have any action compression, right? And I'm like, correct. But he has, like, everything else, right? Like, he has, you know, him walking and attacking is a, especially with his power gain, right? Like, the builder makes power, he gets power for crits, and then he has an incredibly good throw, right? So, like, his ability to walk, punch, throw is quite high, and doing that is better than other models that have action compression, right? Like, I'm sure I could go find some four threats that have action compression on the card that end up doing less than what a better than six dice punch and a size three range three throw will do for you, right? And so that's his action compression is just high stats.
We were both just listening, watching the Carol cast, as I'm calling it, right? And like, one of the things they started talking about is just how good she can be when she like walks, throws a cosmic ghost rider into other characters, and then puts a really solid attack into them. And that is a very similar play pattern that you can get out of Doc Ock.
Yes.
He actually generates the power more reliably than himself than she does.
Mm-hmm.
And he's faster.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he throws at a greater distance. He obviously can't throw size fours. He probably shouldn't be able to throw size fours, but just way more excited about this podcast after I realized he plays foes twice. So let's dig into this last matchup.
Yeah.
So,
bring his roster does have two peta flips, right? So he has Madman, Scoundrels, and Spider Portals as his three high scoring crises. And I think those are great choices for Doc Ock, right? I really liked all of that. But so he gives me my secures because you see, I have Spider Portals, Mad Men, same as him. And then I have Meteors instead of Scoundrels, which he's fine playing on Meteors.
Yeah, totally.
And then
fine.
He really wants to get his extracts. So he takes his extracts and we flip Paranoia again. And I was like, okay. Again, I think Paranoia is quite good for him. And so having learned my lesson from the last game, I was like, all right, we need to approach this a little differently. And very happy to be on Spider Portals because I do think while like Doc Ock and Lizard are really good at Spider Portals, I think Rhino is perfectly serviceable on Spider Portals. I do have ultimately, I think, a slightly better squad than him for that crisis.
So did you guys play at 18?
I think so. Yes.
I assume if you're playing Ultron.
Yeah.
Did you consider, I feel like 16 is worse. Like obviously it's hard for you to play Ultron,
mm-hmm.
but I feel like 16 is like, because obviously kind of like Foes wants to start with that core of Ock and then Rhino and then Lizard, right?
Yep.
And then trapping, like, I don't feel like 16 is like a wonderful threat level for them. Was that in the conversation at all? Or was it just that like 18 is like just so good for your list that you would prefer 18?
Yeah, I think with a bit more practice, I could have been convinced to pick 16, but like I have already played Spider Portals at 18 threat once this weekend. I knew the squad. I knew how it worked on that crisis. I knew what the game plan was. Right. And so this was just a case of going with what I know I will pilot correctly.
Repetition, confidence. Yeah,
exactly.
Fair.
But sitting about it afterwards and talking to you here now, I probably would have been more correct for me to pick 16. I just was going with what I knew.
Totally fair. Like, I mean, especially sixth round of an event, trust in the muscle memory and the, you know, and the confidence levels and the repetition. Yeah, I get that. What did the teams end up being?
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure I played the same squad. I played Ultron 2. I played Pyre. I played Storm. 11. I played Logan.
and then one more affiliated three.
Probably so, Domino.
Probably Domino. Yeah.
Yeah, it could have been X-23, one of those two.
I do think X-23 is good on Paranoia. Giving you another healer.
Yeah.
I probably would have played X-23, but I know you're slightly more Domino camp than me.
I am, but I was like, so X-23 was actually also a last minute addition to this roster alongside Ultron. Because I found there were situations where I needed either another three threat, like at 20 threat, I remember being some lists where it would be like Ultron and then five threes and felt really good about that. Right. So I needed a fifth three. And then there's also situations where like I wanted threes, but I don't want to play Beast. Right. And I do think like, I like Domino. She's not incredible on spider portals. You have to really be smart with her positioning on spider portals because she has no additional mobility, right? And a lot of times the shorthand for paranoia or for portals is just having charges or extra movement goes such a long way on that crisis. So I might have played X-23 here. It wouldn't shock me.
So it's Schrodinger's X-23. Got it.
He did something interesting here that I think is worth talking about. Where like he's like, all right, I'm playing a scenario team. We're on spider portals. He had Amazing Spider-Man in his list, right? And I'm like, I think ASM is an interesting choice for Doc Ock. They have some very cute synergy, right? Where like he also gets power for rolling crits now with his buff, right? So both, he's very good at spider portals. You cannot argue that ASM is not great on spider portals.
Not an argument I'm going to make.
He can get to any of them. He can usually get to any two of them in one activation. He's good at flipping them. He's efficient at flipping them. Very good at that.
Gives them a safe grab. Like
exactly. Yep. Yep. And then the Doc Ock leadership also is pretty cool on ASM.
Protects him from incinerate, protects him from slow in a lot of cases. Like
it really lets him witty banter because like you can attack him. He can spend a power for witty banter, get that power back, even if they do no damage. Right. It keeps him very full on power if you end up having to try to attack ASM. And so I think there's a lot of interesting stuff there, but it does run the risk of kind of doubling down. Cause like what ended up happening in this game is that, you know, ASM was a safe grab, grabbed a thing and backed up. And then ASM was good at flipping one portal, but the lack of output from him in this list that's kind of pillow fisted, right? Like it's not totally soft, but if you're playing Lizard and Rhino a lot, those models aren't the best attrition pieces, especially Lizard, right? Nobody's going to talk about Lizard's damage output.
So I assume he played Ock, Lizard, Rhino, and then ASM and a two.
That sounds right. Yep. Yeah. He is,
you know,
2-point
which
Widow.
Two it was? 2-point Widow. 2-point
Widow. Okay. Which I think is very good here. She's very good at scenario stuff. The extra power is very funny on her. There's not really a better choice. Maybe Toad. I think Toad would be interesting here, but either one of those two is fine.
I think I would play Toad, but yeah. Fair. And then, yeah. Okay, so key moments in the game?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing was for me, you know, everybody's very excited about new buffed ASM, right? I am too. He's definitely better. But I'm also a noted on-the-record ASM hater. Since he's come out, right?
I have also been an ASM hater, so
and so like I think he's definitely better than he was, and I now like respect him as a choice in especially in like Web Warriors. I think there's very good and interesting rosters to play him. I think in Defenders I'm interested to see how that shakes out, because the problem I have with ASM is his damage output is still bad. Right. It's always been bad. Agreed. It's better than it was, right? Because he gets power more often. His spender's perfectly okay. So he does more damage than he used to.
Cutting the power cost off that spender. Certainly helps me hate his spender less.
Absolutely. 100%. But he's still pillow fisted. And so I think in this list and in this game, he ended up really feeling the lack of that attrition, right? And so kind of like I said, where I'm playing my games more mid-rangey now with more of an attrition focus, right? I was able, you know, Ultron 2 could sit in the middle of the board and pick on like Rhino and Doc Ock, right? And just start gunning these people down. And his five threat, who's better at Ultron than Scenario, but only by a little, honestly, right? Because while ASM can get to any of the points and attempt to flip them, he still doesn't have any displacement. right?
Yeah.
And he still has to make contested flips more often than, and like,
fucking
Ultron
Ultron's got Bao, because that was okay.
It's so... Ultron 2 just has it all, man. He just does everything. Yeah. And so I really think that's where you could feel the difference in the game, and that, like, our supporting casts were both doing what they needed to do, but Ultron 2 was just, like, crushing it, killing people, flipping points, controlling stuff, and ASM was running around with his one paranoia, flipping portals here and there, but not having the same level of impact between our two fives. And so I think ASM has a lot of on paper synergy, but I still don't think the character is quite good enough that I'd want to splash him here and would rather pick up some other pieces for Doc Ock.
Yeah, I can certainly see that. Like, I think my instinct here is I would just rather have a 3 and a 4. Like, I just think Widow's fine, and like ASM I actually think is a really interesting choice here, and I would probably prefer it more at 19 or 20, but the choice here, especially with being paranoia, like, there's bound to be a 3 and a 4 in your roster that are just rock stars here.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. Like, I don't think I like any of the two threats right now. I think Toad is probably the one I hate the least, but I've been very happy playing roster that doesn't have a two threat, and it hasn't had a two threat for quite some time. And I'm just kind of down on all of them. So I'm totally with you that I'd rather cut the 5 and the 2 here for a 4 and a 3.
I've been playing X-Force. I actively dislike 20 threat. Not as bad as I dislike some of the others, because it's like I'm playing my sweet 18 threat list plus a 2 threat. It's just not as good as my 18 or my 19. Like, I totally get it. I'm on board with you. Like, when you're playing like an affiliated 2 bullseye or something, it's fine. But I'm with you there. So you just get kind of an attrition advantage, and you just got your models just kill better than his, and you're able to come out on top. So you end up 5 and 1 overall. What was your like placing? Not that it matters that much, but
yeah, I was 6th.
Best, yeah. X-Men.
Best X-Men. That was important.
Best X-Men. Yep. Out of curiosity, what are all the second wind coins, the little wooden nickels? What do you have, Brady?
Well, in 3 second winds, I have come home with 5 of those tokens, because I may get some of the extra ones that Pat prints out, because there's always some test ones.
A little cheating going on here, which makes the Brady reference even better.
Yeah, uh-huh. But I've legitimately won best in faction the 3 times of the 3 Marvel second wins there have been. Right? I'm not lying about that.
X-Men, yes. X-Men, a winning token.
Brotherhood is what I played in the first Marvel second win, and I got 2nd place. So I have a Brotherhood token. I have now 2 Cyclops tokens. And then I have a Star-Lord one from second win 4, where no one showed up with Guardians. And so I just kind of, when we were cleaning up, I snuck the Star-Lord one into my bag. And then I have there's a Storm he made, I forget what year, but it kind of came out pretty hazy. Like, it's just kind of faint the way it cut. So he cut a different Storm to put into the prize, or must have been second win too. Yeah. So I have a slightly off Storm token as well as the 5th one.
Sweet. So you probably have best overall mutant performance of all second wins ever.
It helps having gone to all 3, right? Not everyone went to second win 3. That was definitely the smallest turnout.
But like a second place, a first place, and then you said 4th place?
6th.
6th. But like, yeah. Still, that's very strong. You're mutant and proud for sure.
Absolutely.
Simon, this goes out to you. You're going to have to step up your game. You've got to prove yourself in the mutant competition. So, man, like, I just want to talk about Ultron a little bit more. Because this guy is such an interesting character. And it was weird how, like, when I first read him, I don't know how I feel about him. And it, like, it was, like, some team discussion about him. And I'm like, oh, man, maybe this guy's really good in X-Men. Like, one of the things that I noticed in like my very first game with him was, because of the nature of them not being able to pick up extracts or not being able to like interact with secures in any way, I made probably three activations with them where I literally just blocked landing zones for my opponent. Did that come up at all so far? Like, have you used them in that way, or has it been mostly attrition?
Yeah, so I haven't used them in that way, but I have come to a similar conclusion that people are letting me get away with things they shouldn't be, right? And that my opponent is like, oh, well, they don't score points, right? They can't pick up secures, they can't do extracts, can't do any of that stuff, and they hurt me when they kill them. I should just ignore these things. And I was like, all right, if you insist. Yeah. And so there's so many games where I'm just like, oh man, my turn gets much worse if they kill my grunt here. And they just refuse to do it. And so the benefit of just like the Ultron Hub, plus those grunt attacks are very good. I got so much value out of a number of turns where my grunts could just stand still and shoot twice, or even just like walk shoot, right?
Yeah.
There's multiple situations where like my other supporting cast would leave a model on like one health. And I'm like, I don't really want to waste an Ultron attack to just tap that in. Hey, grunts, can you just take care of this for me so that Ultron can pick a fresh target and just start laying into them, right? They definitely, I think my performance would have been worse if my opponents properly respected everything the grunts are giving me between the mobility and their attacks. Especially because like getting his grunts back out there is kind of complicated, right? They're the only grunt where if he spawns them, it is two turns before they get a real turn.
Yeah, they, well, especially like, and your list doesn't have like a ton of throws, right? You're like, yeah, sure, Beast can blow up a terrain, mm-hmm. maybe, but that's really not your optimal use for him. Same with yep. Storm, but again, you'd rather throw characters away.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, there's no like gimme to get them back in, right? And like I really think avoiding as hard as you can bringing them back with Ultron makes a big difference, right? Because if he spawns them, they're staggered and they don't activate that turn. So the next turn they get one action, then the next turn they get two. And so I did end up having, you know, they did die sometimes, right? I'm not going to say like my opponents never dealt with them. They just let me get away with stuff. But like it did end up being worthwhile to have Storm just like check a car into nowhere to spawn the drones for Ultron, right? It didn't immediately feel good. Like I'm sitting there thinking about my turn. It's like, man, I really need the drones up there. Beast isn't on the table. Like I only had Storm as my only other throw in the whole game. Like, I'm going to throw some off a point. Let's see. Right. Let's just, I think this math ends up. And then I did it. And then I'm like, no, this is great. This was absolutely the best thing I could have done with three power on Storm. Cause Ultron, like the two drone attacks and one drone attack, cause they're staggered. Sorry. And then the Ultron hopping and doing what he wants to do paid off so much.
Paying three power for a four dice attack and a six dice attack.
Yep. This is great. Mm-hmm. It didn't come up, but I was definitely looking for ways to like block Lifesaver from Gwen when I'm playing into webs, right? Just being like, oh, drones walk twice, lock you in. Cool. Now Ultron can kill you, right? Blocking throw lanes so they can't throw stuff into Storm, right? And just like, oh, you're going to try to throw Ultron into Storm to kill Storm. Put a grunt in the way. Great. There's so much stuff like that that I'm sure I've only like just started scratching the surface of.
Yeah, barely. Like you block the perfect landing zone for an eye in the sky or something, mm-hmm. right? Like there's a lot of things that come in there. And in general, like when you're playing X-Men, I positioned Ultron and the groans on different side of the table because I just wanted the medium bases for hopping off of.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of little value plays like that, that just having an extra medium base on the field, I don't think people fully value, right? Like I'm happy with her. Like people undervalue four die attacks. So I think they're undervaluing the attrition advantage they give you, but also like you say, blocking landing zones.
There's just interesting situations for that. So you did play Ultron all six games.
Yes.
And it sounds like you're pretty happy about that overall decision-making.
Yeah, like that wasn't really the plan going in, but every time I sat down and like, you know, looked at the crisis, started building squads, figuring out what my options were, I was like, okay, I see how Ultron would be useful here. You know, it's like, oh, he's going to do X, Y, and Z for me, right? Cool, put him in. Next round, same thing, look at it, figure it out. I'm like, no, it seems great, put him in. Yeah. And then by like round four, I'm just like, damn, this guy's just, like, he's just an all-rounder piece, right? Like, he's got damage, he's got durability, he has control, he has anti-control, he's got the grunts. He just kind of does a little bit of everything. And so I never regretted it. And every game, he was either the MVP himself or just, like, a solid performer never let me down.
I love to hear it. Like, that's just, I mean, especially he's a really cool model.
Yes.
I would actually say, I think his overall grunt model is probably my favorite of the grunts.
Oh, it's definitely my favorite. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the ninjas are pretty cool, but the drones just like, they have a better silhouette, I think, for just like being generally playable and easy to manipulate. I think the five drone bodies looks better than the three characters.
Yeah. I like the Ultron drones are my favorite because I think they do the best job of looking cool, but also being just obviously mooks, right? Like it's Ultron, it's just a pile of little tiny robot dudes. We're like, the ninjas look almost too impressive to be just the random idiots you're beating up, right? And I think the Ultron drones aesthetically just like exactly hit that line of looking cool, but also like, oh, these are the trash robots that I just smash up for fun. Got it. Understand.
I swear the coolness of the ninjas does somehow affect their dice rolls because somehow they all do more damage than Daredevil. Daredevil will roll like 5 dice and like 9 dice attacks, and then like the fucking ninjas will just kill shit. They get bonus aesthetic points. So well, obviously, you didn't back to back X-Men win, so everyone's just super disappointed in you in general. And I know it's a hard pill to swallow, but you did let Zach win, which I guess is cool because he's kind of just one of like the best people on the planet. So I guess that's fine. So next year, are you part of the running team next year?
Probably not. I've avoided it because since I'm not local, I kind of get to ride this line of like, I'm a TO, but I'm also on vacation and I'm also here to play. And so I think, especially
Pat and Vince also like preferring the running.
I also think that if I am able to put together this team event, that it's looking pretty likely that I'll be able to put together that, like, that will be my TOing duty and I won't want to TO two major events in a year. I would be expecting that I'm playing in second win six.
Okay. You get to come back. All right. So do you think you'll stick to something mutant?
I would like to, right. I have no intentions of switching off of X-Men, right? Like if we want to talk about LVO, which is the next event that I'm planning and preparing for, there's no way I don't play X-Men there unless they drop another rat out of nowhere, which seems unlikely. Very unlikely.
We might not even have a model release before
LVO
at this point.
We might have like the Wakanda Rivals panels, kind of all I'm expecting to be different between right now and LVO. So absolutely we'll be playing X-Men there with probably largely the same list. I don't know. Maybe we can talk about that. Maybe you want that in the bonus episode, but I will be on X-Men for the foreseeable future.
Well, very, very cool. I still happily enjoy that I got to play you with X-Men and then you switch to X-Men and just become a rock star. Not that you weren't great with Guardians as well, because you had
I've definitely done better with X-Men. Yeah.
It's been a fun road for sure. But I don't want to keep you recording for too long. I know we have so many things to talk about. I gotta have a little bit of time for some bonus content. But
sure.
Obviously you have your own podcast, you have Second Wind, you have a team event. At this point, shout out anything you want, thank anyone you want. Like special shout out to Carl for painting Ultron. I'm going to steal that one from you because I just love that guy. Yeah. So special shout out to Carl and Carl Khan. Way to Ultron it up, buddy.
So let's see if I can just not make this too long. Shout out to Carl. Carl's great. Carl Khan 2 is going to be happening in the same brewery September 7th of next year, I believe. That should be a Saturday. Early September next year. The date's out there. It'll be on the website. I'll let people know tickets on sale. But if you want to start marking your calendars for that, it'll be a great time. I got a shout out. Also, my buddy Eric, who's kind of my main testing partner. He also showed up on that Wednesday to help me figure out the Ultron stuff. He's been very crucial in building on my list. So Carl and Eric are definitely the local homies that have done the most to help me out.
Those guys help you test lists and are like there for the practice. Mm-hmm. You cannot thank those people enough for
definitely
just,
not.
You know, yeah. So huge shout out to Eric.
Yep. And then, you know, I have Alfredo Size Taco Truck, a podcast that I'm legally obligated to promote. I think it's pretty good, worth checking out. There's definitely, if you want more of like this exact conversation, there's the pre-Second Wind episode where I go into like exhaustive detail on all the reasons that convinced me to play Ultron and all the things I thought about, like, oh, I think this would be good and this would be good and this would be good. And if you listen to that, it turns out everything I said in that podcast was true. Like everything I was like, oh, this would be great and this would be great and this would be great. Over the weekend, I learned, yep. So that's a really great one for the like really nitty gritty details of the Ultron stuff.
I will say your episode post Second Wind last year was probably one of my favorite MCP episodes of any show all year long for 2022. Oh, thank you. I just thought that was a super insightful episode in general and like very entertaining. And you guys have just been hitting it with bangers like for like the last like 7 months, 7-8 months or so. I mean, I feel like Alfredo's is just like really on point. And you know, just honestly, like genuinely, and I can say it, like even if I didn't record my own podcast, I would look forward to your episodes more than I look forward to mine.
Aw. That's so nice. Thank you. Yeah.
Definitely, listeners, check out Alfredo's. And if you can make it to Second Wind, everybody says nothing but fantastic things. Here is 64 people, a crazy amount of competition. But also, I mean, you guys have a really good track record of, I mean, I've been in the miniatures game community now for a very long time. And so I always hear when negative things happen, like I get all of the like I get
the hot
all
goss.
Of the like the gossip, and then like, and sometimes it's just like, oh, this thing happened at this event, are you gonna watch out for this player at LVO? Like I get
sure.
that
yeah.
stuff too.
Yeah. I've heard some of
and
that. Yep.
I don't hear anything about Second Wind, right? Like nobody, it's, I don't know if you guys like, if something bad happens, if you just like lock that shit down, but I don't hear anything negative. It just sounds like you have brewed up a really strong community, and like people just come for really great games, and like you embrace the experience, and it's just nothing but positivity.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something like you said, that it's a combination, I think, of, you know, luck and then just having the right community, right? That Second Wind really does, you know, we're not hiding anything, you know what I mean? It just, it goes so well, right? Of any event I've run to, we've never have people with behaviors or sportsmanship. Everybody respects the brewery, which is the most important one, because like we're playing next to the brew tanks. At any moment, somebody could just like break a $20,000 piece of equipment and Second Wind's gone forever, right? It's just like,
please do not do that. Like, this is not a challenge, please. Error on the side of caution. This is cool. This could ruin the whole reputation for everyone doing brewery events now. Dizzard's literally moving to the Pacific Northwest, and we're like, can we also do this?
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know he was moving up there.
Yeah, he's I think he's officially out of the military as of this week and moving to the Pacific Northwest, and said he should potentially be up here maybe 2 weeks-ish.
Oh, shit.
Roughly.
Okay.
Yeah. And so we are definitely in the talks of like what kind of cool Omnis protocol rogue agents, you know, tag in Lexa, like Morlocks, and just like have a cool event somewhere. Like what can we do? And so there's just lots of potential for the future.
Yeah. I mean, if you guys put together a brew event, I'll make the flight up there. That's not a hard trip for me at all. So I'd absolutely be down for that.
Since there's the Rogue Brewery up here, we were like, that would be fucking hilarious if we could make that happen. But anyway, huge shout out to everything that you guys do. I mean, let's not thank Vince too much. Like, I don't want to, you know, but like the whole team, and Vince riding on all of your coattails. All right. Well, we'll have a little bit more for everyone in the Patreon bonus episode, but I mean, I can't thank you enough, Nate. Every time you come on, we just have really amazing episodes. And like, we got to talk about Doc Ock. We got to talk about Ultron. We got to talk about X-Men. Like, what a better mix of content. I don't know. All right. Well, I will just say the most OP thing that you can do is guest host a podcast and then accidentally talk about both of his favorite new models, just like Nate did. Later, nerds.